You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, frenetic, fresh, and frequently frenzied friends. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 24. And of course, I'm your humble host, and I guess a little bit hoarse today, Karen. And we are your zany zoo of zippy zealots, not xylocarps.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana. What's a xylocarp?
Yeah, I'm curious as well.
Xylocarp, I'm glad you guys asked. And that's spelled with an X.
Okay.
X-Y-L-O carp.
Uh-huh.
You'd think it's like a xylophone made out of fish.
Yeah, musical
fish. That would be
fish.
My first assumption. Yeah.
It is. I found out it's kind of like a coconut. It's like a fruit that has a hard and woody shell.
Okay. Uh-huh. So,
oh, like a coconut is a xylocarp?
Yep. There you go. Right. Another word that starts with an X that's not X-ray or xylophone for you to use.
That is
xenophobe.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, xenophobe. Yeah.
We're not even into the proper show yet, and we're already dropping knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take that. Speaking of fruits and more knowledge, I actually just read this 5 minutes before the show. Do you guys know what the state vegetable of Oklahoma is? Just off the top of your head.
I want to hope it's okra, just so they can make some Oklahoma jokes.
This is going to blow your mind. It is a watermelon.
Ah.
It's a vegetable?
Okay. Well, so the officials have logically deduced that, you know, the watermelon is actually part of the cucumber family.
Mm-hmm.
And they love watermelons, so watermelon's their state vegetable. It's very logical, but except for the fact that cucumbers are officially fruit. So no Chris today, obviously, and he's actually working at the Classic Gaming Expo in Las Vegas. We all know he's a big video game nerd.
Yeah, he's too big for us today.
Professional nerd.
He is a professional video game nerd. And we've all done a fair bit of traveling ourselves. I just came back from Chicago last night. And Colin, you just came back from?
I came back from Paris.
Paris!
Yes, I was in France. Paris and Strasbourg as well for a couple days. And it was fantastic.
I was holding down the trivia fort over here. Chris's Bill of Rights mnemonic. Came in handy at trivia.
Yes. So today we have a super big show today and a super special show, and for good reason. We're pretty excited, and let me just tell you a quick story. A few weeks ago, I got an email from a very cool and hip New York City-based menswear company called Bonobos.
Like the primate.
They sell like really cool crisp shirts and pants and, you know, really sharp and awesome looking men's clothes. And they told me that they listened to our show at their headquarters office.
Yeah,
Isn't that cool?
That was awesome. That was really cool.
Hi, Bonobos.
And people there, like us, are giant, humongo trivia nerds as well. So, like peanut butter and chocolate, Sherlock and Watson, Rhode Island and coffee milk, we thought maybe Good Job Brain and Bonobos would make a pretty cool and good pair. And so, you know, you listen smart and you look smart. So we always kid about how, oh, we're looking for sponsorship and maybe someone will sponsor us. And it's happening. We're so excited to announce that our new BFFs, Bonobos, will be sponsoring this episode and a few of our upcoming shows as well.
Woohoo! Now just change clothes.
Uh-huh. No, I stay fresh, the better boy from the projects, and I'm gonna take you to the top of the globe. That means we have special Bonobos quiz segments, prizes, offers, and just general awesomeness in store for everybody. And rumor has it, the quizzers over at Bonobos are actually currently working on upcoming ways to stump us in the future. And stump you, the listeners.
Yes, yes. So, and being the only guy present at the table today, I can, in fact, vouch that they make good pants.
They
look nice.
Yeah, they look very good.
Colin's blushing
now. Well, you know. Well, I mean, you know, I think all guys will agree that one of the primary goals is, hey, is if women say you have nice looking pants, you're doing something right.
So without further ado, let's do our first general quiz segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. And this week, we're actually going to do a very special Bonobos edition.
Mm-hmm.
Get your barnyard buzzers ready, everyone. The two of you, I guess, now. And so the following questions are general trivia, but they're all kind of related to Bonobos in a way. So we can learn a bit about them at the same time. Number one, if you don't know, bonobo is a type of ape. Even though sometimes they're referred to as bonobos monkeys, they're technically apes.
Right.
They're not monkeys. And they're kind of famous. If you are into science, you might know that bonobos, they like to have a lot of sex.
Yes.
Anthropology.
They're studied a lot by anthropologists, yes, for what they can learn about human behavior.
Yes. Quote, high levels of sexual activity, which I promise we will get into more detail in a later episode. Ooh. Because we all know
Karen likes to talk about things doing it.
We love weird animal facts, and specifically weird animal reproduction
right.
facts.
Right, it's only a matter of time until the needle comes around to that as a topic.
Yeah. Yay! But speaking of sex, it was discovered by scientists in Argentina that the drug sildenafil citrate aids jet lag recovery in hamsters.
Yeah, you can give them. I cannot tell you how many times that has ruined a business meeting for me.
You need some sildenafil citrate. What is that more commonly called?
I believe that's Viagra.
Correct. Yes, you can feed your hamsters, your jet lag hamsters, Viagra.
Perks them up.
Perks them up.
For 4 hours.
Or less.
For an awake hamster lasting longer than 4 hours, consult your veterinarian.
Call your hamster doctor.
Who's funding these highly focused studies?
Argentina, apparently.
All right.
Keep fighting the good fight. Number two. So the name of this type of fabric is derived from the Persian word for soil. Mm. And back in the day, this term became part of the English language thanks to the British Indian Army. What type of fabric am I talking about?
Fabric. Oh, is it muslin?
Incorrect. It can be a color or a fabric.
Okay. Oh, I have another guess, but if...
Do it.
Indigo?
No,
it is
khaki.
Oh, of course. Okay. British, right. Okay. Khaki comes from meaning...
The word for soil in Persian.
Okay.
But I thought the word khak means poo. Like, I thought poo colored.
Poo color, too. I'm sure there's some overlap meaning. Okay.
way to take it down a level, Dana.
Sorry.
We're all giggling now.
Poop is funny.
Okay, number three. Tech companies like Hewlett-Packard, Xerox, Pinterest, Mashable, and of course, electric motor company Tesla, all have headquarters in what U.S. city?
Is it San Mateo?
Incorrect.
Is it close to there?
Yes.
Is it Palo Alto?
Correct. Palo Alto, one of the big tech Silicon Valley cities in the area. And it's also where bonobos had their start, too, because the founders went to Stanford Business School.
Yay, Stanford.
Karen and I are a little conflicted being, well, we're all Cal grads, but Dana has also some Stanford cred as well.
They were nice to me.
Okay. I have a little bit of school rivalry there.
Yeah, I went to both schools.
Yeah,
so I do.
You can claim
really
you can claim allegiance to both. Yeah.
Okay, number four. So bonobos had been lauded in a lot of fashion magazines for their awesome pants and jeans, like in Esquire and GQ and very, very spiffy magazines.
Yeah.
And you know what? There are so many times in pub trivia where we're asked about iconic magazine covers. Time Magazine, Man of the Year,
right.
Or who's on this iconic cover and whatnot. So in 1968, what magazine featured a controversial cover image of Muhammad Ali being pierced by 6 arrows? Do you guys remember that photo?
Yeah, yeah.
What magazine was it?
I'll guess Sports Illustrated.
It is Esquire.
Esquire.
Oh.
Two.
Was it an allusion to Saint Sebastian?
Wow, you're really smart. No. It is Saint Sebastian. He's like a Christian martyr.
Right, and was put to death by, as I understand it, or remember, basically he was bound to a tree and shot to death with arrows. Mm-hmm. And so like that in the religious iconography, if you see, you know, the saint with, and usually it's just an arrow or two sticking out, that's Saint Sebastian.
He's the patron saint of athletes. Okay, last question. Paronomasia is a form of wordplay which suggests two or more meanings by exploiting multiple meanings of words or similar sounding words for an intended humorous effect. That is paronomasia. This is also more commonly known as what?
Is it puns?
Correct. Pun. I tried to look for the root of the word pun, but I think it's just so
It's so old,
colloquial, but you know, the official, or I guess the more technical term, is paranomasia.
Huh.
Yeah, and I threw in this question because if you go to Bonobos' website, you can see that they really win the award for like best pants names. Seriously, grats to this guy who decides on all the names because they're fantastic.
Yeah,
they're
all a lot of fun.
Really punny, and that must be one of the most awesomest job in the world.
Do you have any good examples?
So they have a pair of dark khakis they call Graham Slackers.
They're sort of the dark color tread, the cappuccinos.
Oh, I like it. No, I actually love puns.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
So there you go. Hope you learned a little bit about our fabulous sponsor, Bonobos. So they're giving Good Job Brain listeners a special 20% off offer for new customers using their code, of course, Smarty Pants.
That's perfect. Really, that's great.
So you can go to www.bonobos.com. That's BONOBOS.com and check out all of their great stuff.
And the code once again is
Smarty Pants.
A space between or no?
No space.
There's some nice clothes on
there. Check them out. Yeah. I do recommend them. I'm wearing them right now.
I was jealous.
Yeah. Yeah, we wish we can wear those clothes. It'd be awesome. Pants for the fellas, shirts in cool styles and unique prints and awesome accessories and completely free and easy U.S. shipping and return and perfect for work, for school, and of course, looking smart at pub trivia.
Yeah.
So we are recording this episode. Today is Sunday, August 12th. Today is the closing ceremony of the Olympics. And we thought before we wait another 4 years for people getting all caught up in Olympic fever, we would do an episode on the Olympics. But I'm sure we've all heard about or read about the big Olympic news and such, right? But what about all the weird facts and histories that most people don't know about? So for today's show, we're going to specifically talk about the weird, the bizarre, and the lesser known facts and trivia about the Olympics.
Woo!
Woo! Have been getting a lot of mail through Twitter, Facebook, and email asking us, where's the dedicated Olympics episode? Nikki Metcalf on Facebook said, every pub quiz right now must be filled with Olympic questions right now. So how can we help people out?
I mean, even leading up, we've, I hate to say it, missed a couple Olympic questions in the run-up. Things like country codes, you know, which we'll get to a little bit more later. Yeah, all kinds of
what
weird
cities.
Right, cities to mascots.
I'm predicting one of the big questions at Pub Trivia will be about the Olympics logo.
Oh, yeah.
The five rings. So we know the colors are, there's blue, there's black, there's red, there's green, and there's yellow.
Right.
And of course, actually, there's a sixth color, and this is really important. Technically, there are six colors in the Olympic logo.
Which is the,
white
background.
The background.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, I think I see where you're going. Like, I remember learning once that those colors were picked because they represented the colors of the flags of the world, meaning that every flag in the world had at least one of those colors in it. Is that something like that?
I think that's the modern interpretation now. I think before they were supposed to represent a lot of the different countries participating in it.
Mm.
I don't think they were gunning for the whole world,
mm-hmm.
but now I think it is
of all
logically
the participating
true.
Nations, right? Yep. And the number of rings refers to the five continents. Is that right?
Technically five parts of the world involved in the Olympics at that time.
Ah.
And that was like about in the early 1900s. So that's 1912. And so the six colors are supposed to appear on all of the national flags that competed in the Olympic Games at that time.
Okay. That makes more sense, because there probably wasn't a strong fielding team from Antarctica.
Hey, they have white. White's in their flag. And I actually made a little mnemonic to help you remember the colors in order. Obviously, white is not in this mnemonic, because that's the background, and hopefully
you should be able to remember that.
Yeah. So I'm going left to right,
Okay. Kind
of zigzagging.
Sort of like it's like in a W shape, basically,
yep,
right?
Yep. Okay. So it's the colors are blue, yellow, black, green, and then red. Blue, yellow, black, green, red. And so my mnemonic is bludgeon your bladder gets it red.
What?
Which is probably
bludgeon
true. It's probably true.
Bludgeoning your bladder?
Bludgeoning your bladder gets it red.
So blue, yellow, black, green, red. That actually works pretty well. Bludgeon your bladder gets it red.
So there you go. That's going to show up in a lot of pub quizzes, I bet.
Here, I have a general Olympics quiz that I've put together. And this is sort of in the spirit of a sports quiz for non-sports fans, which I've done before. So
you're lucky because your audience is, is Dana and me. Yeah.
So the idea is that you can reason these answers out. You can make educated guesses. And because they're Olympics, you know, I think that all of us have at least some fascination with Olympic sports. So we'll go right in, and I think you guys will do pretty well. Since the modern Olympics started up in 1896, the Summer Olympics, there have been five sports that have been featured at every Summer Olympics since then. Never been dropped. Some have gone away and come back, but these five have been at every Olympics.
Consistent,
that's right. Mm-hmm. Some of these are kind of wide-ranging. So athletics is one. And when we say athletics, that's what we usually think of when we talk about track and field.
Okay.
So all the track and field, those all are all part of athletics.
Okay.
Swimming is another one. All the swimming events, the number of races has varied. And artistic gymnastics. So the parallel bars and the pommel horse and the rings, those kind of things. So those are three of the five.
Okay.
What are the other two sports that have been at every Summer Olympics in the modern games?
Okay, guessing. Dana. Wrestling and weightlifting?
Oh, that was my guess.
Wrestling is a great guess, but no.
Greco-Roman wrestling.
It was there in the original Olympics, but it has not been in every Olympics since then. It did make a departure for a while.
And weightlifting.
Weightlifting, also a good guess, but no. One of these is a very classic sport.
Rowing.
Ooh, no, also a good guess. It is fencing.
Oh. Okay.
And cycling have been in every Olympics since the modern Olympics started up again.
So let's see. So it's cycling.
Cycling, fencing, athletics.
Which is track and field.
Track and field, right. Swimming. And gymnastics.
Yeah.
That's right. Have not taken a break. And you're right. Wrestling was there at the beginning, but it went away for a little while and came back. And tennis was there, in fact, at the very first Olympics, and that went away and came back.
I'm surprised weightlifting wasn't, because it seems like...
basic.
Like, so basic. All you'd have to do is have a big rock and see who can pick it up.
or even wrestling. You just have two dudes.
Yeah.
I was more surprised that wrestling had not been there consistently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would have been my first
guess. So you don't need a special equipment. You don't really need special...
You just need a mat. Basic.
And two angry dudes.
They don't have to be angry. So speaking of athletics and track and field, the shot put has been a longstanding Olympic event. It was there at the beginning. What is the shot put? Why is it called the shot put? Can you explain either or both parts of that?
Shot put. Did it used to be like a cannonball?
That is exactly right.
Oh, I am a genius.
It basically comes from an old competition that goes back most likely to medieval times. And there are absolute records of cannonball hurling competitions. It basically came from military kind of training games of soldiers would see how far they could essentially hurl a cannonball. The direct predecessor of our modern shot put.
A drinking bet.
Oh, of course.
And the put really is just because you're not throwing it overhand like a baseball. You're kind of just pushing it.
You can't really throw it.
It is shot. It is a cannon shot. The modern awards that we give out the top place finisher, gold, silver, and bronze medals, that only dates back to the 1904 Olympics. In the 1896, the first games of the modern Olympics, what did the top finishers receive?
Ooh, it sounds like a trick question.
Yeah. Not a trick question. Not a trick question.
Was it
Dana?
Just gold and silver?
It was close.
Silver.
It was just silver to the first place, copper medal to the second place, and nothing for third place.
You get nothing.
Right. Now, now in addition to the medal, so first place got a silver medal, an olive branch, and a diploma. Second place got a copper medal, a laurel branch, and a diploma as well. And third place just got a hearty handshake, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
This is according to the official IOC records. Yeah.
And it's so weird because we're so trained to thinking that first place is gold, second place is silver.
Yeah.
Third place is bronze.
Yep. Just incidentally, they have since retroactively assigned gold medals to those first place people. Okay. So when they do these like tallies of most gold medals all time, they sort of updated those original standings.
Very confusing.
Like they meant gold.
Yeah.
They gave them silver, but
it's retroactive inflation. What was special about the swimming events held at the 1908 Summer Games in London?
Give us a clue.
It was a first.
the first time they filled the pool with Jell-O.
I wish that were that.
I know.
You're in the right ballpark.
Oh man,
that was the first
freestyle Jell-O.
The freestyle Jell-O
nail biter.
That was the first Summer Games where the events were held in a swimming pool. The three prior Olympics to that were not held in a pool.
Where were they held?
So in Athens at the 1896 Games, they swam in open water in the Bay of Z-E-A. They literally took the guys out on boats, dropped them in the water, and they held the events out in open water with currents and frigid temperatures. In 1900, in the Paris Games, you can probably guess, they swam in the Seine, which by all accounts was not a very hygienic place to be swimming. So they swam in the Seine, and again, having to deal with currents and cold temperatures. And then in the 1904 Games in St. Louis, they were in a lake in Forest Park, which at least was contained, I suppose.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, so nice little symmetry there with the games being in London this year. Again, they had the first pool-based swimming events. The following sports have all been demonstration events at the Olympics, except for one. So now, going back to the original
games. What is a demonstration event?
So, for most of the games in the early years, and even well until pretty recently, they would have a demonstration event or sort of a trial event, where it's more for kind of just to show it off and introduce it to the world, see if it maybe would work to be incorporated. And several sports were incorporated from demonstration events into actual events. Like most recently, I think curling is a good example. Curling in the Winter Olympics started as a demonstration event, and then it was incorporated into a full-fledged event. So I'm going to give you a list of five events.
Do they still give out medals?
No. Sorry. Yeah, good question. They don't give out medals. They're more just kind of, here, we're demonstrating this event, world. See if you like it. So I'm going to give you five events. One of these was not a demonstration event. Water skiing, bowling, hot air ballooning, horseshoes, and motorcycling.
I want to say horseshoes.
That's my
correct.
Guess.
Correct. So, yeah. Good guess. Yeah. The one on there that most surprised me was hot air ballooning.
See, that is too weird. That's the red herring. You want us to say balloon because it's so weird, and that's why it's not.
No, but you remember when we were talking about the duels from the hot air balloons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a thing. People
it was a thing. And yeah, that was 1900. Motorcycling, 1904. Bowling, the most recent, 1988.
Wow. I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
I was in a bowling league.
Men's and women's bowling. And
we were the worst in the league. We were terrible.
So no one on your team went on to the Olympic
demonstration. We were little kids, but we were the worst little kids.
Do you guys have those like little balloons that fill up the
bumper bowling?
Oh yeah,
that's fun. I actually want to do that as an adult.
They fill up. Yeah, you can never ever get a
no losing
zero.
It doesn't matter how much you drink or how low your skill, you're still gonna get it and knock a pin down.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hey, Matt. Did you know that wombats poop cubes?
Nope. Never heard that before.
Did you know the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland, Ken?
I didn't know, nor do I care.
Neil. Did you know that Liechtenstein is the only doubly landlocked country in Europe?
Jeff, isn't that an American pop artist?
Well, actually, it's both. If you want to learn things like that and more, join us each week on Triviality, a pub trivia-style game show podcast where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Listen in each week to answer general knowledge trivia alongside exciting guests from around the world.
And we're here, too.
Join us every Tuesday for new hour-long episodes of Triviality, plus tons of extra theme content on everything from The Office and Lord of the Rings to science and geography.
And sometimes we even do sports.
Find us on all your preferred podcast apps and take part in the fun of playing bar trivia without the need to wear pants.
Real mature, Jeff.
Forget it, Neil. It's Triviality.
All right. I have a couple questions here. I referred to the IOC country codes earlier. Ooh. And these, I always find these fun. So these are the three-letter official codes for each country. And some of them are very obvious. America is USA and Russia is RUS. And so a lot of them are fairly logical. Okay. Some of them are a little more obscure and take some figuring out. But I think they always make for good trivia questions.
Wait, so these are only for the Olympics?
That's right. These are IOC codes. And some of them may overlap with like world championship codes or other things like that. But And the list has changed over the years, but this is from the most current list. These are the official codes that if you're watching the Olympics right now, you'll see.
Okay.
There are 200 different codes. So I'm going to ask you just a couple questions here. All right. So one of these country codes is ASA, which is American Samoa.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So there are two more palindromic country codes, and I think you guys can get these. These are reason outable.
PAP.
For what country?
Papua New Guinea.
No, incorrect. One is in South America, one is in Central America.
Ooh, South America, Uruguay.
Correct. U-R-U. Uruguay. Right. Mm-hmm. All right, one more. Central so you got the South. America. So Central America.
Costa Rica.
What's Costa Rica?
C-R-C.
Oh, okay. So I would think it would be like COS.
Yes, yeah. So Costa. We have ASA, American Samoa, CRC, Costa Rica, URU, Uruguay.
Wow. Did you go through all 200 codenames to find
out? Yes, I did.
Good job, Colin.
Luckily, they're available in convenient table format. All right. One last question here around the country codes. So I'm going to give you three codes, and you tell me what they stand for.
Okay.
I'm going to give them to you in a list, and you just work on them all at once.
Okay.
All right. T-U-N, T-U-R, and T-U-V.
Tunisia.
Correct.
That's T-U-N.
T-U-N is Tunisia.
R is Turkey.
Correct. Turkey is T-U-R. T-U-V.
Tuvalu.
Correct. Yes. Good job, Ooh. Guys.
My question is, my burning question is, I remember a while ago when they announced the London Olympics, people were all really jazzed and psyched, and they debuted the London Olympic mascots. Do you remember that? That was like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
People were not very happy.
They were, I feel honestly like they've just been getting kind of stranger over the last few Olympics. But this year in particular, it was like the one-eyed alien, right? Or
they represented the Industrial Revolution or something.
Well, that is just way too high concept. Yeah.
I just want a corgi.
I want some tiger cubs. Something. Yeah. Yeah, corgi. A corgi.
The perfect.
Yeah.
We're done.
Well, when they
So what happened to them? I haven't seen any of the mascots.
Wait, what were their names? It was
Wenlock and Mandeville.
Wenlock and Mandeville. Oh, rolls off the tongue.
The mascots, though, are usually kind of my favorite part of the favorite. I enjoy the mascots.
Yeah. I think it's cute because they do different sports and stuff.
Did you know that the tradition for Olympic mascots hasn't been around since the beginning? It started actually in 1968.
Oh, that's
really
late.
Recent.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Winter Olympics in France were the first time. And that same year, they did it in Mexico City, too.
Oh, so what was the first one?
The first one was a skier. It was like like
an anthropomorphized. No.
But after that, they got the red jaguar in Mexico. That's when it really started becoming
the animal trend.
And they started giving them cutesy names and things like that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's when they discovered the power of merchandising.
So I'm going to do a mascot quiz with you guys.
Yeah.
So see if you remember. But to make it fair. Fair for our listeners and a little more, maybe a little more interesting to guess what the answers are. I'll give you all the summer cities since 1968 really fast. So Mexico City, Munich, Montreal, Moscow, Los Angeles, Seoul, Barcelona, Atlanta, Sydney, Athens, Beijing, and London.
Mm. Ooh, I think I only start remembering from Seoul.
Yeah.
I think we'll be okay.
All right.
We're in this together.
Let's rock and roll.
Let's do this. All right, let's do this.
All right. So this is for Karen. I think you're going to know the answer to this.
Okay. That means it's a dog.
It's a dog.
There were five mascots in the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing in China.
Oh, I remember.
Do you remember what they are?
They're all pandas.
No.
What animals were they?
A fish, a giant panda, the Olympic flame, which is not an animal. It's a Tibetan antelope and a swallow. Yeah.
I just remember the pandas.
So which Olympics mascot had Sam the bald eagle? or two American ones.
That was L.A. in 84.
Isn't Sam the Eagle from The Muppets?
Right, that's true. Yeah, the big blue eagle character.
Which one was the first computer-generated mascot?
Oh, what does that mean?
Let's see.
Computer. I want to say this year's, the London ones.
No, it was 96 in Atlanta. It was Izzy the What's It.
Izzy the What?
And it would change its shape. It would be a boat sometimes or like random.
That's a cop out.
It's computer generated.
So you mean he was just like CGI created or?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which Summer Olympics game had the mascots Ollie, Sid, and Millie?
Oh, Ollie. Oh, it's got to be Sydney,
yes.
Right? Like
Sid for Sydney, Millie for Millennium, because it was the 2000 games and Ollie Olympics.
What were they?
It was a kookaburra, a platypus, and an echidna.
Oh, an echidna.
Echidna. There was an unofficial mascot that became more popular than the official mascots, and it was to make fun of the commercialization of the mascots. It was super edgy. It was a wombat. It was Fatso the Wombat.
Not sanctioned by the IOC.
No.
Fatso the Wombat.
Yeah. So which mascot was drawn in a cubist style?
That is Barcelona 92, Colby the Catalan Sheepdog.
Ah,
nice.
Of ba-bam.
Got it. Of course.
When it's a dog, I know it.
Picasso being one of the fathers of cubism.
Okay, so this was one of the most famous mascots, according to Wikipedia.
So it must be true.
So this mascot was drawn by a children's book illustrator and went on to become the first mascot of a sporting event to achieve large-scale commercial success. It was a doll, it had an animated short film, and it was a TV animated cartoon.
Huh.
I don't know.
It was 1980.
Okay, so 80. Oh, 80 was Moscow.
Yes.
So, a red bear of some kind? I don't know.
It wasn't a red bear. It was Misha the bear.
Ah. Oh,
cute.
It was really cute. I've seen it around. I didn't realize it was Misha from the Olympics bear. Yeah.
Hmm.
Good job.
You know, as we were getting ready for the show, like doing a lot of research, one of the things that I had the most fun with was like seeing how equipment and stuff has changed over time.
Oh, yeah.
Like obviously the record keeping and timekeeping gets more precise as, you know, clocks and mechanisms get more precise. But, you know, just very quickly, one of the things was, you know, how they had outlawed the special swimming suits from two Olympics ago. They were saying, you know, you're not going to see as many world records being set because they just felt the suits were too good. So I was looking back, you know, we see the track events, the runner into the starting blocks, and they're the little things behind the feet that they brace their feet on when they push out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what they did before they had starting blocks? Like, I assumed this was something that went all the way back, but starting blocks are fairly modern. They really didn't have them until 1929.
I would just guess nothing.
They would dig holes into the dirt track, and before the start of the track events, they would have trowels, little shovels available, and each racer would be responsible for digging his, there was a man at the time, digging his own little holes into the ground that he would dig his feet into to start out of. And of course, this would leave holes all over the track, and it was just no way to maintain a proper running surface.
Yeah.
So this was just how they did it. You'd be responsible for digging your own hole, and you would dig out of that like a divot until they had the bright idea of, well, you know, what if we had just a block of some sort that we could actually push off of? The basic principle hasn't changed. They've gone from wood to higher tech materials, and the way they're attached to the track is different now.
They probably standardized it a lot better now, right?
Yeah.
Because they're all the same model, same make,
same
weight. It's
the same model, right. And in fact, if you watch closely, you can see that all of the starting blocks in the modern events there's a little speaker that's embedded into the track. And do you guys want to guess what the speaker is for? You can probably figure this out.
Knowing to start?
It's so that the sound of the starter pistol reaches each sprinter at the exact same time, so that the person who's closest to the starter pistol doesn't have an unfair advantage. This is how carefully precise they want to be about it. So the speaker funnels the sound, sometimes it's a tone, often it's a starting pistol, so that they each hear it at the same moment. And this is how far the technology has come from holes being dug in the dirt.
So I don't know if you guys have been watching beach volleyball. Beach volleyball, very popular sport for both
I wonder why.
Women and men. So you know how when they dive in the sand, they roll around and they get up and they're spotless. Like none of the sand stick on them. Whereas when we go to the beach, sand's everywhere.
It's in my mouth.
And everything. And you know, for years I've been wondering, I was like, is this some kind of crazy like tech sand? Like, is it fake? When they play beach volleyball, they kind of fake a lot of things. And, you know, they have like really bright lights to simulate the sun. What about the sand? Why doesn't the sand get into all of their sweaty bodies?
I just assumed because it was just super clean, high quality sand or something.
I thought they had special Olympian bodies. They don't get
special lotion.
They sweat differently than we do.
Special
anti-sand lubricants. But no, actually, you're right. It is some of the best sand in the world. And believe it or not, it is a strictly regulated type of sand. So there's no little stones or pebbles, no shell, all pretty much the same size and weight and shape. Wow. And they have people who rake it regularly to keep it not densely packed.
It has a nice subtle lemon flavor to it. This is the cream of the crop in terms of sand.
And it's nuts. It's really just very well picked sand.
Wow.
There are people who go and pick the sand. Is that nuts?
That is kind of amazing.
You'd think they would come up with some sort of synthetic sand. They've talked about how it would cost so much more to come up with that volume of synthetic sand that they can only use like once every 4 years than to just hire some dudes raking sand on the side.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, in high school I played volleyball, and like when we would go play on the beach from time to time, honestly, we were just happy if there were no chunks of broken glass and cigarette butts. Like that was pretty much our standard for, this is good sand. I only saw two cigarette butts and a Gatorade cap.
It's not too much cat poop in this.
Yeah. Not too much.
It's regulated by the International Volleyball Federation. I want to roll through some Olympic sand just to see how it feels like.
I wonder if people try and steal handfuls of it. I bet they do.
I want to.
Going on eBay right now.
Yeah,
Olympic
just get a little jar back.
Sand.
I want to see this awesome sand.
They could probably sell that as a souvenir for a lot. Little jars of beach
Let's
sand.
Write a letter, you guys.
Dear London Olympics.
Can I have some sand?
Also, your mascot should have been a corgi dog.
Do you guys know who Sergei Bubka is?
Bubka.
It's fun to say.
Bubka.
It is fun to say. Booby.
Sergei Bubka is the current world record holder in pole vault.
Which one's pole vault?
Pole vault is the one where they have the long stick and you jump up as high as you can and clear the crossbar.
So random.
It's just so random. And they would get so high on this pole and it curls up and they bounce and they fly over. Sergei Bubka is the current world record holder. He is a very, 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 very famous Ukrainian athlete, possibly the most famous Ukrainian athlete. Before the breakup of the Soviet Union, he competed for Russia. But what he's primarily so famous for is being extremely dominant in his sport, more dominant than any other athlete in his or her sport, to the extent that he set the record over 30 times. Every time he set the record, he was basically breaking his own record. There was the only time he ever lost his world record at a meet, he claimed it back again in that same meet. So this is how dominant he was, that he was competing against himself for the bulk of his career. So what really interested me about Sergei Bubka is the way that he would compete. So since he was just competing against himself, he would basically never jump higher than he had to. So for most of his jumps, he would raise the bar the absolute minimum you could. So which is 1 centimeter at most meet. Because his reasoning was, why jump higher than I have to if I'm only competing against myself? If you look at his like the last 10 times he set his record, it was only by 1 centimeter at a time. There was the other half of the story came out and it makes so much sense now. It wasn't just for competition. It was also financial. So when he was competing for Russia throughout the 80s, there were financial rewards for things like winning events and financial rewards for setting world records.
He's a smart dude.
He's a smart man. So he would set a world record at an event and claim his prize, you know, both from the event oftentimes and from the Russian government. And then he would wait. You know, there's no need to set another world record until the next event and claim more rewards and more financial payouts from the Soviet Union at that time. In a way, it's very kind of calculating, but I think it's brilliant.
No. He's that good.
He's that good. And I think this should be a term. Like, to pull a Sergei Bubka is to do just the little that you have to do to set a new mark and then wait for somebody else to beat it. What is in some ways kind of ironic, he only has one Olympic medal. So he's one of these guys who was kind of cursed at the Olympics. So all of his records come in world championships and other track meets. The first Olympics in 84 that he would have been eligible for, they boycotted the Soviet Union, so he didn't compete. His next Olympic in 88 was where he got his one gold medal in Seoul. He didn't clear in 92. He had a foot injury in 96, and he didn't clear in the 2000 games, and then he retired the year later. For somebody who's considered, you know, the most dominant in his sport ever, he has one medal, and it's a gold medal.
Have you seen King of Kong?
Yes. I was just thinking about that.
Yes. So I think that in King of Kong, that is the same phenomenon going on.
The world record holder in Donkey Kong had this super high score, and so this upstart comes, and he gets a better score than the previous world record, and then the previous world record holder has a videotape of himself getting a slightly higher score than that, and it sounded like there were rumors that he had like a room full of videotapes of himself getting slightly higher scores.
And I made that exact comparison when I saw the movie. Smart. I'm like, he's the Sergei Bubka of video games.
So that's Olympic fever talk. A lot of things that you don't hear about. It's very interesting. And we have our final quiz segment, and our final quiz segment is a music round.
Woo!
Yay!
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
So we have a music round, and it's a little bit different because I need two-part answers, and I'll tell you the theme. So we know in pop music, there's a lot of songs that sound very familiar, sometimes too familiar.
Right, outright rip-off sometimes.
Rip-off sampling inspired by. So here I have the original sources, and then you have to identify the artist in the song and also what song
samples
what song famous is. Okay. All right.
And here we go. This first one will kind of whet everybody's appetite.
Two parts. So that the original is Under Pressure, which is David Bowie and Queen, I believe, a joint effort. And famously sampled, if not infamously sampled,
stop.
By...
collaborate and listen.
Vanilla Ice Ice Baby.
He argued it was different, though.
Yeah, that is just one of the most pathetic things,
He would argue it wasn't a sample, right?
Right, because he took out one of the beats or something like that.
Yeah. No, he added an additional note.
Oh, sorry.
So bum, 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 bada, bum, bum. You know, Vanilla Ice was ultimately forced to pay Queen and David Bowie, and they were actually retroactively given the songwriting credit for the sample. All right, second one.
You hear him howling around your kitchen door. You better not let him in. Little old lady got mutilated late last night. Werewolves of London again.
You were first.
So the original that I know is Werewolves of London, Warren Zevon.
Correct.
The piano in particular. And I think it was Kid Rock, right? It was I'm really ashamed that I know this was Kid Rock. And that was the one where he sampled two songs, right? He sampled
All Summer Long.
Okay.
He sampled both Werewolves of London and
it was Sweet Home Alabama. Right. Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Very good. And here's number three.
So is Huey Lewis and the
Yes
and the News. Don't shortchange the News, Dana.
I want a new drug.
Yes.
And then at first I thought it was the Ghostbusters song.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Correct.
Wait, the Ray Parker Jr.?
It sounds like Ghostbusters. Yes. So actually, funny story. The producers of the film of Ghostbusters approach Huey Lewis and be like, oh, can you help us write a song? And at that time, Huey Lewis declined the offer because he was actually working on the soundtrack for
Back to the Future.
Yes. And so they gave the option to Ray Parker Jr. And when they got the song back, the Ghostbusters theme, Huey Lewis sued Ray Parker Jr. for copyright infringement, claiming that the melody was stolen from I Want a New Drug. And they actually settled off of court, but there was some
So
drama
that's less a
two.
Sample, as more of a copy.
More inspired
of a ripoff.
In the style of Huey Lewis.
And here we go. I need love, love to ease my mind. I need to find someone to call mine. But mama said, can't hurry love. No, you just have to wait. She said, love don't come easy.
That's Can't Hurry Love is Diana Ross and the Supremes, right? I forget if it was solo or...
The Supremes.
Okay, yeah. The Supremes. And then... The sample.
The opening beat sounds pretty familiar, doesn't
it? Is it Lust for Life? Iggy Pop?
Yes.
You know, it's funny. I may be exposing my ignorance until just now. I never really thought about that Lust for Life. It does. The same drum beat. It is. Yeah.
Also, yeah, relatedly, really... there's also there was trouble between the band, the current band Jet, with their hit.
Yes.
And you might remember from...
That was the other one.
Well, yeah, from the iPod commercial, Are You Gonna Be My Girl, also uses that similar beat. So there was some drama between Iggy Pop and Jet because it was so similar. But then there was this information about, well, this kind of sounds like the Supremes, so who's really at fault?
And they had to settle it with a steel cage match between Diana Ross and Iggy Pop, I'm pretty sure.
I bet Diana Ross won, too. She's feisty.
Well, it's clear that it was her song.
So no documents have been released stating whether or not Iggy Pop or Jet, you know, had to pay Motown because this was a Motown team.
Right, right.
Very similar, huh?
It really is.
Yeah. And last one.
They really rock it in Boston and Pittsburgh, PA. Deep in the heart of Texas and round the Frisco Bay. All over St. Louis and down in New Orleans.
Sounds really familiar.
It does. I know.
Gosh, well, I'm gonna go backwards on this one. Okay. Are you getting that the song doing the infringing or copying was Surfin' USA?
Yes,
the Beach Boys.
Yes.
All right. And now, as for who's singing on the first one, was that Fats Domino? Was it the Big Bopper? Who was that?
It was Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry.
And the song is Sweet Little 16. When Surfin' USA came out, Chuck Berry's like,
Wait a second
here. Props to Chuck Berry. He actually confronted the group. They settled it. And Chuck Berry still holds the copyright rights for Surfin' USA.
Good. Hmm.
Good.
Because the whole song was
Surfing USA. That was Surfing USA. Right.
They did a cover version.
There you go.
Famous influences.
Inspired by. Yeah.
Based on and inspired by.
This other song I really like.
So that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you guys, listeners, for listening. And hope you learned a lot of weird histories of the Olympics that, you know, you don't really hear about or see about. You know, that's the juicy stuff that we like. And you can find us on Zoom Marketplace, on iTunes, on Stitcher, and also on our website, which is goodjobbrain.com. And we're also on Twitter and Facebook. So check us out there. And don't forget to go to Bonobos and check them out too. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.